Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. A little sleepy. We're recovering from our trip to North Carolina, which is why we weren't here last week. We were in North Carolina, and I am still recovering from sleep on that, just because my flight schedule is kind of weird coming back home.
Yeah, you had some weird, like, you had a lot more time flying than I did, because I just got a direct flight back to Utah, which was really great.
Yeah, I did go from Raleigh to JFK to back to Phoenix. So it was kind of annoying. So I got home at like 1 or something like that on Sunday night. And today's Tuesday, we're recording the 3rd. So a little sleepy, but I'm going to bed right after this, so I think it should be okay. And before we get into the show, we're going to talk about Christian Yelich about to sign a contract extension, but most of it's going to be about the NBA, just because we missed about a week and a half of NBA action. But I think we'd be remiss to not talk about the basketball museum at the University of North Carolina, because that was insane. They had like Michael Jordan shoes from the national championship game. They had like literally just like the most random stuff. They had a recruitment letter that Mike Krzyzewski sent to Michael Jordan. I mean, too much stuff to like think of off the top of my head other than those couple Michael Jordan things. But it was honestly the coolest sports museum I've seen.
What I like about the Mike Krzyzewski letter, and that was basically what it was, is he was saying like, hey, I'm sorry to hear you're not interested in learning about Duke anymore, but good luck. What I like about that is somebody from North Carolina saw that letter or heard about that letter and was like, Mike, we need that in our museum so people see it. Like, the petty of acquiring that, I really enjoy.
The ultimate troll job.
Yeah.
And the lady who like walked us into the museum, she even mentioned that letter. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have seen it. But she's like, yeah, we got a rejection letter that from Mike Krzyzewski. So it's pretty funny, but yeah. It was. And so everyone needs to make it out to Chapel Hill.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, what I found interesting, and Jake, you can tell me if you disagree, but it seemed, and I'm not saying that Duke does not hate North Carolina, because they clearly do, but I noticed on campus, at least not so much from the students or the fans, we didn't talk to them as much, but at least from the actual university and, you know, the marketing or the sports department, there seemed to be a lot more official "we hate Duke" stuff from North Carolina University than Duke is setting out "we hate North Carolina" stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because we were Duke as well, and I you know, I guess I just know a lot more people and have more familiar with North Carolina than Duke, so I don't want to speak for them. But I kind of think there's a little bit of entitled with Duke. So, like, the coolest thing, like, the meanest thing you can do to a quote-unquote rival is, like, disrespect them or, like, pretend they're not important to you.
Spoken like a true Utah fan.
Yeah, so I kind of think some of that's going on. It's the same thing that North Carolina does with North Carolina State, which is there's a true disdain between those two schools. So I kind of think Duke's trying to pretend, or not pretend, but like act as the private school, the whatever school, you know, and like pretend North Carolina is a public Ivy. So it's not exactly like Durham Tech or anything like that. But I think they're trying to be quote unquote classy or whatever is the only reason I think we saw more anti-Duke stuff in Chapel Hill than the other way around.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The feeling is very mutual.
Yeah, I have to say, you definitely did pick the wrong week to go down, and I know you didn't pick the dates per se, but there was no Duke North Carolina game, which is like the point of going to North Carolina.
I know Duke and North Carolina are playing this weekend, literally against each other. When we were there, the both schools were on the road, so we went to North Carolina State game, and they played Pitt, and it was a fun game, but
it was. I was shocked at how not loud the crowd was. Maybe that's just because it wasn't like a huge game and it wasn't against North Carolina or Duke. But I feel like if we go to a BYU game at the Marriott Center, even if they're playing Pepperdine, it's louder. Or even if the Jazz are playing like the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's loud. And not just in moments, but throughout like the entire game, there was a level of loudness. And I was shocked that it was quiet more than it was loud in the stadium.
Well, I think part of that is because, A, they play in a hockey arena with the Carolina Hurricanes. And, Matt, we were talking about this during the game, but if you look at basketball arenas that are also hockey arenas, the bottom of the arena, like the floor, is spaced out more. So, like Chicago, the Chicago Bulls, it's spaced out more. I'm watching Boston versus Brooklyn right now, and it's spaced out a little bit more. Where you mentioned Utah, like the Jazz, that stadium is like straight up. It's like Texas A&M's football stadium. The part of the reason it's so loud is just because it's straight up. So I think that was part of the reason. Also, it just wasn't super full. Where like Cameron, where Duke plays, it's like 9,000, 10,000 people, and it's tiny and it's packed. So, you know, the volume just like kind of builds off each other. Where it was just a really big stadium that wasn't all the way full, which is why I think it was a lot of silence there. It was only about 80 students there from what I saw.
Yeah, it did not seem like there was a lot, or at least there wasn't a very well-marketed student section. There could have been students. I'm sure there were sitting not in the student section, but that's, you know, a lot of what makes the stadium loud is that all the students are sitting together and doing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so it wasn't a lot, but it was still a fun game. I kind of liked it. It was nice and low-key.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice every once in a while, particularly if you don't care about either of the teams. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it was fun. Duke and Carolina definitely have better campuses, I have to say. But it's still a fun game. The food in Raleigh we ate it after was like top five meals of my entire life.
It's very good.
Very good. It's called Old Time Barbecue. If you're in Raleigh, check it out. I can't think of anything else. A lot of it was just other school visit stuff. So, oh, Civil War. Apparently, Matt, we learned this on the trip. Abraham Lincoln died before the Civil War was over. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Seems like something that we would want to know. But yeah, I hadn't realized that. I just assumed that it was after.
Yeah, I assumed it was like a year or two after. Yeah, because it went General Lee surrendered at Appomattox. And then about a week later, President Lincoln died. And then about a week and a half later, General Johnston of the Confederate Army surrendered to General Sherman in Durham, North Carolina, is how we know this. And that was the troops from Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, and South Carolina were the final troops to surrender. So it was after Lincoln died is when the war officially ended. So fun fact, little trivia question there for everybody. And we also just set the record for Civil War talk on the podcast.
Yeah, see, we're an educational show.
We're an educational show, Matt. Should we talk about Yelich real quick and then some NBA stuff?
Let's do it.
So there's nothing. It's really more of just a headline than anything else, but it happened today is why I wanted to bring it up. But he's him and the Milwaukee Brewers are close to signing a deal that'll pay him about between $30 and $35 million a year. It's only about 7 years. So the total value of the deal is only about, not only, but it's a little over $200 million. Mike Trout's deal is over $400 million, but it's about double the time frame. So it's about the same value per year as Mike Trout, but it's about half the time. But the Brewers, they let Yasmani Grandal go. He signed with Chicago White Sox. And, oh, shoot, what was the little guy who was – he played for – Kansas City, and then the Brewers, then he signed to Cincinnati. I can't believe I forgot his name.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy. You're the baseball guy on the show.
I know. Mike Moustakas. And actually,
oh, yeah, Mike that guy.
Moustakas. Remember, he was on that World Series team for the Royals that lost to the Giants and then beat the Mets that next year in the World Series. Mm-hmm. So the Brewers lost both of those guys in order to help sign this deal for Yelich. So I'm excited to see how good the Brewers are next year. Because I thought if Yelich doesn't get injured, I thought they had a shot to win the World Series last year. So,
mm-hmm.
And they were in the NLCS 2 years ago, so we'll see what happens. But Yelich is probably my favorite non-Giants player in baseball, so happy for him to... He just seems like a nice guy, you know, like a normal dude.
Yeah, it's good for people to get their money. So it's too bad it doesn't have that that length, though, so he's not going to be able to get that money when he's older and probably wouldn't be able to sign for $35 million a year. But hey, you know, I think if you sign for $35 million for 1 year, you can't really complain.
Can't complain too much, yeah. Speaking of the NBA, Matt, let's go into the NBA. So I'm watching Boston-Brooklyn right now. Brooklyn got fouled on a three with 0.2 seconds left. And the guy, I think it was Caris LeVert, but Brooklyn hit all their free throws, so they're in overtime right now. Currently up by 6 over Boston. And even though Brooklyn beats this game, I think Boston, especially with the way Jason Tatum's playing, is the biggest threat to beat Milwaukee. And I think you could argue that they could be the favorites in the East to beat Milwaukee. I will say I thought this last year in Milwaukee smoked Boston in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But just the way Jason Tatum's playing and the playoff issues that we could see with Milwaukee, especially Eric Bledsoe, like that point guard spot, that's why I'm creeping back onto the Boston bandwagon last year.
Yeah, see, I think Jason Tatum really does help. I think that gives him that, you know, star level of production. I mean, Kemba is definitely a star, but I just feel like you need a wing, someone more with size who can go get their own shot. So having him be able to do that, plus Kemba being able to do his thing, you're right, it is definitely a big deal. I still think that the Bucks are the favorites. I think that I like Chris Middleton more than a lot of people do, so I think he's a good second person. And then Giannis is just, you know, as good as everybody on the Celtics are, he's just leaps and bounds ahead of everybody on the Celtics.
Who do you think – I agree with you, obviously. Who do you think is the second best player for Boston?
Second best?
Yeah.
Well, it's either Tatum or Kemba. And it depends. Like, I feel like if Jason Tatum, like, he's going to cool down some. It just depends how much he cools down. So if he cools down to where he's just below Kemba, then I think it gets really hard. I'm not even sure they get into the conference finals just because I don't really love their bench, although their top six is really good. I still think you have to say that Kemba's their best player and Tatum is the second best player until Tatum proves that he can sustain this. So, and I think it's likely that he can sustain or at least something similar to it. I just, you know, want to see it before I crown him their best player.
See, I think Tatum got to be the best player his rookie season. And like, I think Tatum's the best player. I didn't even think that'd be a question, honestly. So I thought you were going to say between Kemba and Jaylen Brown or Gordon Hayward. Because yeah. I think Jason Tatum in a close to a runaway. But I think you like Kemba more than I do, to be fair.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, he's no Jimmer, but he's still a pretty good player.
Yeah, he is. I just think Tatum, Tatum has a higher – the thing, Tatum's 6'8", and what we've seen this last, like, few weeks, he did it in his rookie year as well, especially in the playoffs. Like, that high-end potential that Tatum has, where he hasn't been necessarily consistent the whole time, but he's done it enough where you know it's a skill set he has, and, like, that's the ceiling he has, as opposed to just, like, a hot week or a hot couple weeks he's had. But either way, do you think either of those players are better than Chris Middleton? That was kind of the root of my question, because Middleton is the Bucks' number two guy.
I would say Jason Tatum's best is better than Chris Middleton. I think Chris Middleton is probably better than... Chris Middleton is really close to Kemba, probably hard to... It's just because he has such a different role than Kemba is part of the reason that it's hard to figure out, you know, exactly where to rate him. But I think those guys are all just so close together, it's hard to differentiate unless Jason Tatum continues to be the Jason Tatum we've seen the last couple of weeks.
Okay, just because I'm looking at Milwaukee's roster right now, and obviously Giannis, I think it's fair to say he's pretty much a runaway MVP. He's the best player in the league. Middleton's obviously second. After that, are we saying Eric Bledsoe's the third best player? Are we saying it's Brooke Lopez? Are we saying it's Matthews? We're not saying it's Matthews. I think it's either Brooke Lopez or – it's Brooke Lopez because I think Brooke Lopez is better than Bledsoe. Do you agree? Am I being crazy there?
I think that when – here again we're running into the consistency problem. I think you could say Brooke Lopez because – yeah, because of defense, you would say Brooke Lopez. I think Eric Bledsoe can do some really nice things for you when he is on his best, but because of consistency and defense, probably Brooke Lopez.
I just think
thing with Milwaukee is that they're one of those teams where, you know, they're greater than the sum of their parts. The same with the Raptors. They're just so well coached and they have such a great chemistry and such a great system that the coach has developed around Giannis that I think that once you start getting into, oh, well, Boston has a better 4 and 5. That's probably true. I just think that Milwaukee works so well that to me, that's less important. Even when you get into that, you know, you got to have a couple of guys who can get their own shots. Giannis is worth like three and a half guys getting their own shots in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm looking at Boston's roster. I'm looking at Miami's roster. And they both teams just have so many different options they can throw at Milwaukee. And after Giannis and Middleton, we saw last year Eric Bledsoe just kind of crap the bed in the playoffs. Like I'm looking like Kyle Korver, he's 38. Ilyasova, he's a nice player. Like, no doubt about that. He's a nice player. Wes Matthews is a good player. Like, they have a bunch of, like, okay to good players and then the best player in the world. Where Boston, I feel like their fourth guy is Gordon Hayward. Their fifth guy is Marcus Smart. And they're legitimately, especially Hayward now, who's been a lot better this year than last year based off that injury. But Hayward, I think, is a legitimate B+, A- player. I think Marcus Smart is a B+, like 89% B+ player, especially as like the fifth option on offense with what he can do defensively and how important he is to just, you know, that cliche quote unquote winning as a team. Like I'd rather have Marcus Smart than Eric Bledsoe on my team in the playoffs. And Bledsoe's going to be like the third or fourth guy for Milwaukee where he's going to need to score, where Marcus Smart's going to be the fifth guy with no pressure for Boston, and he can just kind of do his thing. So, I thought this last year Milwaukee wiped the floor with Boston, but I think, like, there's – I'm falling into the trap again where I'm just looking at it on paper and thinking there's no way Boston can lose to that. And even if you look at Miami, they got Jimmy Butler. They even before they acquired Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala, they were – I thought they were the most likely team to contend with Milwaukee, but Milwaukee would still be favored. But they got those guys. They already had Bam Adebayo. Jay Crowder, if Marcus Smart's a B+, I'd say Jay Crowder's a B-. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think you put Marcus Smart in a different system and maybe doesn't work so well, but yeah, we can say that.
Yeah, we'll say Marcus Smart in Boston versus Jay Crowder just as a player, because Jay Crowder is definitely more adaptable in different systems, where Marcus Smart, it would be fair to say, if he left to, let's say, Orlando or Charlotte, if he'd be the same type of player. But they got Jay Crowder. They got Tyler Hero, who's had a heck of a rookie year. They got Solomon Hill in that Memphis deal. Andre Iguodala can still kind of shoot pretty well. You know, he's not Andre Iguodala from 2017, but they also have, they got Kendrick Nunn, who kind of came out of nowhere this year. Duncan Robinson, one of the best shooters in the league. Like I just trust Miami's more than their top two guys and Boston. Now I'm honestly talking myself into Miami going through this, but I just think Jason Tatum is the sec. I think he's the sec. It's not fair for me to say I think Jason Tatum is so good he's going to carry the team when Giannis is on the other team. So I feel like I'm just discrediting Milwaukee, but I really think they're going to have issues with both Miami and Boston.
Okay. But who on either of those teams is going to be able to reliably score in the paint against the Bucks? Because the Bucks have the best defense in the paint in the NBA. So, like, I'm not worried about Gordon Hayward scoring in the paint. I'm not worried about any of those players for Miami that you listed scoring in the paint, except for Jimmy Butler. So because of that, I think that makes it so I'm less worried about, you know, how does Milwaukee's fifth guy match up against Boston's fifth guy? Because, like, Marcus Smart is not scoring in the paint against the Bucks. So, and he's honestly not that great a three-point shooter. So just right there, I'm not particularly worried about Marcus Smart.
We have very different opinions on this because I think Marcus Smart is like critical and Chris Middleton's like, eh, and you think the exact other way.
Well, no, I think Marcus Smart is really good. I just don't think that he has to figure out a way to score in the paint against a combination of Giannis, Brook Lopez, or Robin Lopez. And I don't think, like, I don't trust Enes Kanter to defend any of those guys in the paint. I'm not convinced. Like if Boston's best lineup is doing a sort of small ball thing similar to the Rockets, like, and I'm not confident that they're going to be able to rebound against the Bucks. I just feel like I'm looking at this a lot more holistically than you are.
But look at Marcus Smart. Even if he's not going to be scoring, he can literally guard 1 through 4 for Milwaukee. Like, he's not guarding Giannis, but you could.
Well, that's right there. He's not guarding Giannis. Who for Boston is guarding Giannis?
I think this is what you do. I think Jaylen Brown's probably the number one guy, but you could even put Marcus Smart on Giannis and then just understand you're going to have to funnel him into help. I think Jaylen Brown's probably the guy they use, though, right? Because Boston's court is terrible. So you're right on that. Even though Theis has been playing pretty well this last month or so. But I think you can have either Smart or Brown switch off on Giannis. And the other one guard Middleton. And then you got Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward, who are good defenders. They're long, they're athletic. Tatum more than Hayward. They can guard DiVincenzo, they can guard George Hill, they can guard Ilyasova, they can guard Eric Bledsoe. I just don't think Eric Bledsoe is going to be a factor at all, just based off of last year, what he did in the playoffs. So I just think Boston's wing depth, like what they can do defensively, even though Giannis is going to get his 30, they'll be able to not shut down, but they'll be able to eliminate a lot of other stuff Milwaukee does offensively, where it's a lot like what Milwaukee's doing. It's going to be harder in a 7-game series when the playoffs, they slow down, the rotations get shorter and the bench gets smaller. Everything's more condensed. You're playing the same team 7 times in a row, so you're just running the same stuff over and over and over again. I think Boston will be able to take advantage of that. But again, I can't stress this enough. I thought that last year did the exact opposite happen. So take everything I'm saying with a grain of salt. But I honestly think Marcus Smart's gonna be have a big impact in that series.
I think that the only way that Milwaukee loses, I think everything that you're saying has to happen, and I think that Milwaukee has to not make their threes because they've got Kyle Korver, like you said. I'm not sure how much Kyle Korver is gonna play, but they got Wes Matthews, they got Chris Middleton. You'd like Brook Lopez to make more of his threes. We're not sure how many threes Giannis is gonna take. Eric Bledsoe is a 3-point shooter, but the point is, I just feel like if you're gonna be giving, so you're saying two things: you're either gonna let Giannis score in the paint, and I don't like that option at all, or and then you're just hoping that those other guys miss their threes, or you're going to try to shut down Giannis, and that's going to create, if you're defending Giannis in a way that actually slows him down, there's going to be open shots for the other guys, and you're just going to have to hope those guys miss their threes. I think that's their best option.
See, I'm just banking on that. I'm banking on those other guys not hitting their threes, honestly.
Okay, well, I mean, this I mean, I did. I really thought that the Rockets were going to beat the Warriors. It was a year. It was right. It wasn't even a Kevin Durant injury thing. I think it was the year that they won 73 games. So Kevin Durant wasn't on the team. They took him to seven games and then they missed 27 three-pointers in a row. So that can happen. But I just feel like the odds of that happening four games out of seven are just quite low. So,
well, let me ask you this, Matt. Rank these teams in terms of most likely to beat Milwaukee in the playoffs. You got Boston, Miami, and then Philadelphia.
I'm going to go... So Philly is last, then Miami, and then it's going to be a tie between Boston and a team that you didn't even mention, which is Toronto. I really like Toronto. I think they are very, very hungry. I like Pascal Siakam a lot. I like Fred Van Vliet and what he can do. And if we're talking about wing depth, they've got a lot of big, you know, long, lanky guys that can defend. So I might even put Toronto just a little bit ahead of Boston, even though they might, because Pascal Siakam, I think, is close to Jason Tatum, what he's giving you. And I think that the system that Toronto has is better than the system that Boston has.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to end up being right in all this, and I'm going to end up being wrong, because the two teams I'm discrediting are the defending champions, even without Kawhi Leonard, and the best team in the league. But I just don't see it. I have trouble seeing Siakam and Van Vliet lead a team through three playoff series in the Eastern Conference when you have – I don't know why I like Miami and Boston so much, but – I agree with you, Philadelphia is last, and the reason why is we've talked about this a lot, but they just can't get – no one can get their own shot. Ben Simmons won't shoot a three, and it messes up the entire spacing. Embiid is really good. Top three, top five defensive player in the entire league. But without a Jimmy Butler guy who can get his own shot, like, he was so important to Philadelphia last year, and they opted to go with Tobias Harris instead of Jimmy Butler. I think if they would, from what I've heard, if they would offer Jimmy Butler a fifth year on the contract, he would have signed it. Instead, he went to Miami. But I, as much as I don't believe in Philadelphia, just pure talent wise, even with all the problems I just listed with Embiid and Simmons, you talked about Milwaukee not being able to score in the paint. I think they'd be a team that you could maybe.
Yeah. No. Sorry. You just said I didn't say Milwaukee can't score in the paint. I said nobody can score in the paint against Milwaukee.
Oh, sorry. I think Embiid would be able to do that.
I mean, better than anybody else. Like, he's Joel Embiid. I still think he's going to get slowed down and be less effective there. But then that takes us back to the same problem that everybody has with Philly, is that if Ben Simmons isn't going to shoot his threes, then Joel Embiid has to go out to the three-point line. And then if he goes out to the 3-point line, people get mad at him for not going to the inside. And I just, I don't feel like you can have those sorts of arguments in philosophy if you're going to beat the Bucks.
You know, you're honestly right. I'm just trying to think of an argument against Milwaukee, and you're honestly right, to be fair.
Yeah. No, and I mean, like, what you've put forth, those are situations where Milwaukee could lose. I just don't think we've had such a heavy favorite in the East. Well, that's not true, because every year that Cleveland was there wasn't really, or that LeBron was in Cleveland, it wasn't really worth discussing anybody else. But it last year, there wasn't really a clear favorite in the East. This year, there is definitely a clear favorite, and it's hard to see them losing unless something goes wrong, which is, you know, it's basketball, it's random, people get injured. So there's lots of things that could go wrong, but I feel like something has to actually go wrong for the Bucks to lose.
Well, what about Indiana? They got Oladipo. They got Domantas Sabonis, who was an all-star this year. They have Malcolm Brogdon. What about them?
I think they are going to be annoying for the Heat in the first round. I don't know how much farther it gets than that, but I think, yeah, I still don't think that they could really. I think that the Heat win that game, especially if the Heat had home court advantage. I think if Indiana wanted to win, I think they would have to somehow get home court advantage.
See, I think Indiana can be good, but now I don't know. Because their third best player is Malcolm Brogdon, but you're making me doubt myself now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're the one who's just really into Miami and thinking that they're gonna be so good, and
I am.
That's who it looks like they're gonna play in the first round. Well, that's just who Indiana's gonna play in the first round. Like, I like Indiana. I just think that Miami's a much better team.
I had the standings and I accidentally exited out of them. So, do you think it's gonna stand pat, like standing wise, where Milwaukee's 1, Toronto 2? Boston's 3, but looks like they're only a game back, half a game back, or Toronto, so that could go either way. But do you think Indiana's going to finish ahead of Philly then in the fifth spot?
I mean, I think Indiana is trending up, and the Sixers are sort of trending down. So I don't know the strength of schedule. If you happen to know the strength of schedule, that might help. But I think, I mean, if you're the 76ers, it's not unreasonable to just decide we would rather play the Celtics than the Heat, and they might just decide to hang tight. And then the other thing, if you're the sixth seed, not only do you stay away from the Heat and then play the Celtics in the first round, then in the second round you play the Raptors instead of the Bucks, which I think is the really big thing. So the Sixers might just choose to hang out in the sixth seed.
Yeah, you know, the interesting race is going to be between Toronto and Boston for the second spot, because instead of playing Philadelphia, you're playing Orlando or Brooklyn there.
Yeah, getting the 2 seed, I think, is really, really important for getting to the conference finals. I think it gets – I still – whoever is in the 3, I would probably pick, you know, to get into the conference semifinals, but then – you know, it's just really hard to get to the. I just think your road is a lot more difficult, like more than most years, if you're not the 2 seed.
Let's wrap up with this, and I know your answer already, but I'm going to ask it. If you gave me either Milwaukee or Boston or Miami, or we can even say any of those other teams, but for me, it's just Boston, Miami. I would pick Boston or Miami. And it sounds like you'd pick Milwaukee over the entire Eastern Conference. Like, if it was Milwaukee or the field, you'd roll with Milwaukee.
Yeah, I would pick Milwaukee, which is saying a lot. But I just I mean, they're on pace to win 70 games, and there are not a lot of teams in history that the NBA has done that. And almost all of them have gone to the NBA Finals, and most of them have won.
Let's say, for sake of argument, Milwaukee loses to whoever. Doesn't matter. Do you think Giannis is gone in 2021? You think he's going to Los Angeles? Or do you think – it's hard because I don't think even he's decided, but you can still kind of project or predict where you think he's going to go. Because I think he's going to stay. He just seems like that type of player to me. But I don't know him personally, so I have no idea.
Well, he's different than a lot of these NBA guys. I mean, there's, you know, that example from like the summer, you'll see a lot of guys are in Los Angeles and they're working out together. And Giannis is like, no, I don't want to work out with them. If I work out with them, I'm helping them and I want to beat them. So I'm just going to stay. I don't know where he goes. And he probably does go to Los Angeles to work out a little bit, but just not with the other NBA players. He does some commercials, but we know he decided not to be in Space Jam. He's rejected several other commercials because he really does want to focus on the basketball. I feel like if Milwaukee can like, even if they did lose in the second round, if they lose, what's going to happen is if they lose in the second round, he's going to think these points that you were saying, like, Chris Middleton's great, but we need another dude who can get his own shot. I feel like Chris Middleton is a get-your-own-shot dude, but not to the extent that somebody like a Jason Tatum or a Kemba Walker or Donovan Mitchell would be. I feel like he might still stay. I don't think he signs the extension right away as early as he can. I think he waits for Milwaukee to bring in one of those guys. And I think Milwaukee's, you know, good enough and they would have the assets that they can bring it in one of those guys. But if they lost in the second round, I think that they would need to bring in a second. Like, Chris Middleton's an all-star. I don't know if he's a star. I think they would need to bring in a second star if they were going to keep him. And they'd probably need to somehow hang on to Chris Middleton too. So that would involve trading picks. I think you'd probably have to get rid of Eric Bledsoe and or George Hill, which George Hill, by the way, is a really good part of their team. I think George Hill helps them a lot. But yeah, that I think is mostly what that would entail. So get to the NBA finals. He's going to stay. If not, particularly losing the second round, probably have to get a second star.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, they have until 2021, but a lot of those players you mentioned are just not very young, you know, if we're being blatantly honest. Like, Middleton is – this would really – if it was in alphabetical order, it would be really helpful. Eric Bledsoe's 30. George Hill's 33. Where is Middleton on this? Wes Matthews, 33 already. That makes you feel old, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Chris Middleton's, like, not even on this roster. Middleton. Anyway, Middleton, 28. So – Not young, not old, but he'll be 30 by the time Giannis hits free agency. So it's hard. I think I kind of agree with you. It's hard also for Milwaukee because the free agent class this year just isn't very good. A lot of them are restricted. So there's not a lot that Milwaukee can do to even add another player like that. So if I kind of want to see them lose in the second round just so they can go into desperation mode in the offseason. I feel like they'll pull kind of a blockbuster trade. And that'd make them eat that much better or worse. We'll see in 2021 that season. So for my entertainment value in the offseason, I want to see him lose just to see what the GM does roster wise. Because right, they've won 50 games already. I think they're 52-9, if I had the standings right. Yeah, 52-9. But after the Warriors went 73-9 and then got Kevin Durant and broke their team up. So it'd be interesting to see if Milwaukee can do something like that because they're not a great destination anyways.
What I do think Milwaukee has going for them is I think it's going to be really hard to find a team that is constructed for Giannis as well as Milwaukee is just because people say, oh, let's just go get another shooter. Like if it was easy to get another shooter, then there wouldn't be teams who needed shooters. Like shooters are a lot rarer than people think. And Milwaukee has a ton of shooters. And that's exactly what you want around Giannis is a bunch of 3-and-D guys. And Milwaukee is the team that has more of those than anybody else. And so I think that staying is going to be very attractive for a lot of basketball reasons.
Yeah. No, we'll see what happens. I'm excited. So, Matt, you're taking Milwaukee. I'm taking the field. I'm sure it'll pan out better for you in June than it will for me. Is there anything else you want to discuss before we wrap up?
No, I'm pretty good.
All right. Well, I'm pretty good as well, except that I was very confident going into this about Boston, and now I'm not. And it doesn't help that they just lost to Brooklyn in overtime. It was like 29-120 or something like that. So shout out to Brooklyn for that comeback win. Caris LeVert dropped 51 at least, Matt.
Oh, good for him. I'm glad he's been able to recover from that. It was an ankle thing, right? Dislocated foot or something.
Ankle leg thing, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So good for him.
Good for him. So Caris LeVert got at least 51. That's what he had when I was paying attention to the game. Then I stopped a little bit to record this, but good for him. We'll be back next week. Appreciate everybody listening. Again, if you're at this point, you already know this, but it's Double Take with Matt and Jake. Remember, subscribe, rate, review. 5 stars only. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to y'all next week.